Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Monday morning health briefs now. The CDC is investigating a listeria outbreak. And with us to talk about that and more, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Thomas Moran. Doctor, good morning to you. As you know, the number of illnesses and the outbreak in the Midwest is probably greater than reported because many recover at home. They're not tested. What exactly is listeria?
Good morning, Rob. Listeria is a bacterial infection that can cause problems in the very young, pregnant, immunocompromised patients, and the very old. When you really think about it, we're more susceptible to getting bacterial infections. Think of it as it's a common foodborne bacteria. So when you think about listeria, like, how am I going to get this? Improperly recooked hot dogs or eating luncheon meats that have not been stored correctly, raw or unpasteurized milk, some soft cheeses. There's various foods that the bacteria, which is on pretty much all our food that we eat, when not stored or maintained properly, can grow. And then when you ingest it, you can get the infection from it.
Are the symptoms the same as food poisoning?
Very similar. Diarrhea, vomiting, fever. Those are the things that you end up getting. So it's one of those things, just like you said, that some of these infections go unnoticed because immunocompetent patients, those patients that are not at high risk, can weather through the infection, and they don't really get tested. They think they had food poisoning or caught something. They have some vomiting and diarrhea, maybe get a fever, but they don't present to the emergency department or their doctor. Mm-hmm. The other ones that end up getting it, get extremely sick and ill, end up presenting, and that's when we test for it and find out the infection that they had.
And how do you treat listeria?
Listeria is treated with antibiotics, usually using a penicillin-based antibiotic to treat it. It is treatable, but again, those that end up getting it sometimes are the ones that are most vulnerable and get sick rather quickly with it, and they should present and get checked out. One of the biggest things is, you know, pregnant women try and stay away from prepared deli meats because of this risk. And then overall, it's really just making sure your foods are well maintained at temperatures. And if it doesn't look right, doesn't smell right, has kind of a greasy looking appearance to it where it's a little bit feels slippery, should throw it out.
Here's another health headline I want to bring up today that also might ruin your breakfast. Sorry if you're eating right now, but we saw this headline, and it definitely caught our eye. How often you poop can affect your health well beyond the gut, according to a new study. Now, without further sickening us, let's talk about this. Is this about how often you go to the bathroom or how often you should go to the bathroom?
Well, the study looked at individuals trying to come up with what's an optimum or normal bowel movement pattern for individuals. And what they found was very interesting. People who have bowel movements kind of in a pattern of 1 to 2 per week, 3 to 6 per week, 1 to 3 per day sometimes. And then those extremes of those who don't go at all, maybe 1 or 2 times, one time a week, or those that go that more than 4 times a day. And what they found with this frequency is those who have less frequent bowel movements have some impairment in their overall kidney function. Those who have more than normal bowel movements sometimes have impairment in their liver function. Hmm. Now, there needs more study on this as we go forward. But remember, we're in a kind of relationship with our gut bacteria. Our bacteria is part of us and helps us process our foods. When we feed our body and we feed our bacteria well with healthy fruits and vegetables high in fiber, we have happy gut bacteria. That happy gut bacteria processes that fiber and we do well. Mm-hmm. When we don't have high fiber or we don't have good bowel movements that go and we either retain or go too often, we usually have, in the study we have found, is a bacteria that goes more for proteins. instead of fiber. Those protein-liking bacteria, for they can affect our overall gut health, and our gut health has a lot to do with our overall health of our body as we go through life. So fiber and high fruits and vegetables, good balanced diet, healthy, good bacteria in our gut, diets that are refined sugars, not healthy, more proteins, kind of leads to a little bit more of bacteria in our gut that are protein loving and replacing the fiber bacteria. And that has a role a little bit in our overall bowel movement pattern. So that how you go kind of reflects your overall internal kind of symbiotic relationship with the bacteria in your gut. And there's kind of that optimum, you know, 1 to 2 times a day as you go through that, kind of a better indication of a healthy bacteria in your gut.
Mm-hmm. Did this study say anything about red meat or alcohol?
Limiting, it's like we've talked about many times in the past, a good diet that's balanced with healthy fruits and vegetables, nuts, limited in red meats, alcohol consumption, mm-hmm. and even smoking plays a role in our gut bacteria and our overall health. I mean, it's just kind of the old saying. It's like, you know, eat a well-balanced diet, exercise regularly, have a good intake of water. Usually that helps overall your body, and your bowel movement pattern would change accordingly with that.
Happy gut to everyone. Dr. Thomas Moran with us this morning. Let's talk about the study about hormone therapy for breast cancer. What did this reveal, Doc?
When we look at the diagnosis of breast cancer, about 70 to 80% of the new breast cancers diagnosed have a hormone receptor kind of positive marker on them, meaning they have receptors on the cell that respond to our own body's production of hormone. And hormone modulation treatment looks at how do we block that receptor from engaging to the hormone and kind of stops the cancer cell from growing. And there's three different kind of modulation therapies. There's really, we block the hormone from attaching to the cell. We bind to the receptor on the cell and kind of break them apart. And then we really kind of limit our own production of hormones of our body. That's kind of the hormone modulation treatment is what we use. In the study, what they found, and there were about 19,000 study participants, 65 years and older, a lot of them had no diagnosis of dementia prior to starting treatment for their breast cancer. And those that were placed on hormone modulation treatment showed an overall 7% reduction in the development of dementia. Now, trying to look through this, it's not like the hormone modulation treatment is really the reason for not having dementia, but it is those that were placed on it as opposed to other treatments for breast cancer showed a 7% decrease in the development of dementia that went forward. There's going to be need for more studies for this to actually understand the mechanism of why this was happening, but it was a fairly large study with 19,000 people in it, and it deserves more attention to further investigate what is the how the development of dementia comes about and where the hormones play a role into that.
Interesting. And over the years, there have been conflicting research findings on all this.
As we go forward with studying dementia in general, as we age, you have more of a chance of developing dementia. But there are some individuals that, you know, don't develop any form of dementia whatsoever, even though they have risk factors that could bring it along, even just thinking about other diseases that help contribute to that. But studies, when you see one study that says, oh, you take hormone modulation treatment and you can help prevent dementia, that doesn't mean taking it actually does it. It's in the contents of that study and that disease that they're looking at it in. And they have to do more investigations to really find out about the relationship to the either medication or modulation of hormones to see what that actually means for the development of dementia.
And when you talk about our mental health and also our physical health as we age, we should really start thinking about this early on, shouldn't we, as far as healthy aging is concerned?
Oh, definitely. If we could do one thing really well for our young children is instill in them the balance of eating well, exercising frequently, and having good social support. Because those three pillars of just you as an individual moving through life really helps your long-term health span when you think about how can I live healthy the longest. Not necessarily the longest age-wise, but how am I functional, content, able to do things longer? And that starts when you're young. Now, even if you're older, they're using those same pillars of modification of what you could do for yourself plays a big role in living a healthier life as we grow and age. Because fueling our body well with a good, balanced, healthy diet, just like we talked about with, you know, having good bowel movements and feeding our gut well and our bacteria, that plays a role in our overall health. And then exercising. And it's not a extensive exercise program. It's really, if you can commit to 30 minutes of a brisk walk a day, that 30 minutes will play a significant role in your mobility, balance, in your ability to continue to do things that you like as you age. And then the social support. Social support plays a big role. As we get older, sometimes, you know, people move, family moves across the country, and we get isolated a little bit. The more extensive our social support and our friends network are, to have conversations, share stories, just interact with people, we have a better mental health, which leads to being able to really balance our diet, exercise more frequently. They all intermingle with each other to actually help us live a healthier life longer.
Yeah, good luck trying to convince your young kids to start early and think about healthy aging.
It is. It's probably the hardest thing when you think about it. It goes to the old saying, you know, if I just knew then what I know now, I'd be so much better off, and it's so true.
Yeah, no kidding. Dr. Thomas Moran, Northwestern Medicine. Thank you, doctor. You have a nice day.
You too. Take care.